Even as a child, I saw witches as sort of a symbol of a kind of independence. I liked dressing up as a witch for Halloween. And, you know, as I got older and learned about women being burned at the stake and called witches, it created curiosity. These were women who were outcasts in a sense because they didn't want to follow the norm at the time. They didn't want to conform to the role that had been set out for them.
They were weird. Dressing up and casting spells in modern times is weird, right? Interrupting important business and future plans for theater is weird, right? Or maybe it's something brilliant. In 1968, a splinter group of radical feminists introduced a new tactic to fight for women's rights. And in the process, they raised all sorts of questions about how normal our normal really is. How did ancient and primal fears provide the perfect imagery for women's rights? How did radical feminists use theater and artistic play to channel their anger and make an impact? And what can we learn from the Women's International Terrorist Conspiracy from Hell, or WITCH, about how to make art as resistance today and tomorrow? From Rebel Yell Creative, this is The Art of Resistance, a podcast about using writing, music, and all kinds of art to resist the status quo. I'm your host and producer, Amy Lee Lillard, and I'm an author, podcaster, and middle-aged witchy feminist who's been obsessing over artists who resisted since I was a kid. And today, I'm looking to make all the weird art and help others do the same. You know all the movements that started in the 1960s? The groups of students, citizens, organizers, leaders, so many activists, so much action. And it's nice to think that those calling for the end of the Vietnam War, for an end to oppression, welcomed everyone into their movements. But most of the time, these groups were led by men. And many of these men saw no problem in keeping women in menial, secretarial roles. They saw no point in talking about equality and equity for women. There's some well-known and public examples of this behavior. At a prominent anti-war meeting, when a woman dared to take the stage and speak, a male member in the audience shouted, "Take her off the stage and fuck her." Then there's Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee leader Stokely Carmichael's infamous line. He said, "What is the position of women in SNCC? The position of women is prone." Women working in these activist groups were appalled at the hypocrisy, and they wanted to talk about the misogyny that even the most progressive of groups didn't bother to examine. So in New York in 1967, exiles from these movements came together with journalists, counterculture members, and even housewives. The New York radical women held discussions and consciousness-raising sessions where they could talk, commiserate, and learn. They were the ones that coined phrases we use today, like "the personal is political." In 1968, this group staged a few protests. The most notorious was the Miss America pageant in Atlantic City. In addition to holding a march, they dropped a massive banner inside the pageant, which read, "Women's Liberation." That image was broadcast live across the country, and women responded. The group exploded. An exciting thing. But so many members joined that the consciousness-raising sessions became unwieldy and unfocused. So in mid-1968, the New York radical women splintered. Some kept the focus on discussion groups, like the Red Stockings. And for those who liked action and a specific kind of theatrical protest, a new group formed, named for the image that terrified and excited. The Witch. Take a minute and think about the witch. There's the lore. Thousands of stories through time and across cultures about spells and black magic and people, specifically women, with the capacity to bend others to their will. There's the history, where the Catholics and Puritans led massive literal witch hunts with horrific trials in Spain, England, France, and America. There's the image of the witch herself. Witches are often portrayed as ugly, aggressive, malicious, refusing to obey tradition and the status quo. And above all else, there's the idea associated with witches of independence. In the stories, the witch is usually living alone in the woods. In the witch hunts, the witches were often those without a man, living by herself, by her own rules. And wasn't that terrifying? What could a woman be doing all by herself? There's a reason the image of the witch persists, even in modern times. Because an independent woman is deeply threatening to a system of male power and dominance. An independent woman is a danger to a system of sexism, racism, and economic oppression. If a woman can thrive outside of a man, then it's all just a house of cards, isn't it? In 1968, all the qualities ascribed to witches, disobedience, rabble-rousing, heretics, independence, were exactly what appealed to the splinter group. The Women's International Terrorist Conspiracy from Hell, or WITCH. They announced themselves with a manifesto that said, "There is no joining witch. If you are a woman and dare to look within yourself, you are a witch." Here's more from that manifesto, read in an episode of the Missing Witches podcast.
WITCH is an all-woman everything. It's theater, revolution, magic, terror, joy, garlic flowers, spells. It's an awareness that witches and gypsies were the original guerrilla and resistance fighters against oppression, particularly the oppression of women, down through the ages. Witches have always been women who dared to be groovy, courageous, aggressive, intelligent, nonconformist, explorative, curious, independent, sexually liberated, revolutionary. This possibly explains why 9 million of them have been burned.
So what would witch do? How would they differentiate from other women's liberation movements? Their primary tool was a sort of pop-up theater called the Zap, which combined poetry, witchcraft, theater, and protest. The first major Zap zeroed in on the center of capitalism, Wall Street. On Halloween in 1968, the women put on capes and pointy black hats. They carried brooms, and they hexed the place. Here's former witch member and photographer Bev Grant talking about the hex.
We had a series of chants that we kind of gathered around and, you know, in a little circle, and one of them was something like, Wall Street, mightiest wall of all street." Wall Street was kind of the symbol of power in this country. We wanted to overthrow that system of power and replace it with something more egalitarian. These executives came out and security guards came out and tried to tell us we couldn't be there, and we just did our thing.
The Dow Jones Stock Market Index fell the next day. From there, covens sprung up all over the country. Boston, Chicago, D.C., all with their own takes and actions, and their own names. Depending on the location and the specific action, WICH became an acronym for Women Infuriated at Taking Care of Hoodlums, Women Indentured to Travelers' Corporate Hell, Women Incensed by Telephone Company Harassment, Women's Independent Taxpayers, Consumers, and Homemakers, Women Interested in Toppling Consumption Holidays, and Women Inspired to Commit Herstory. WICH groups protested the inauguration of Richard Nixon in 1969. They protested House Un-American Committee hearings around the same time. And in a pretty infamous zap, they appeared at the first New York bridal fair. Before the protest, they distributed stickers that said, "Confront the Whoremongers," a pun on the common anti-war slogan, "Confront the Warmongers." They performed an unwedding ceremony in the morning, declaring themselves free human beings. They showed up at the event in black veils, singing, "Here come the slaves, off to their graves," and carrying signs that said, "Always a bride, never a person." The WICH actions and zaps can seem a little silly, especially when you consider the other activism going on at the time. But as we talked about at the beginning, the situation was so poor for women that even the main women's movement, asking for basic things like financial freedom and abortion rights, was considered crazy by the mainstream. Women in the movement were thought of as humorless, nags, lunatics. Women who asked for more than the world gave them were called bitches and cunts. These were the women that were told to smile and said no and were punished as a result. So the offshoot, WICH, was so much more radical, they were almost seen as anarchic. They took all those slurs, rolled them up into the one image of a witch, and owned them. And to all those who said that women's libbers were too serious and couldn't take jokes, WICH played the ultimate practical jokes. They had terrific fun, getting together with friends, dressing up, and going out into the world in ways they never had. They got to play and act and make art. They got to say the things you're never supposed to say as women. They got to become the thing everyone fears.
You know, we were really happy with what we were doing. I mean, these were like spirited actions and gave us a feeling of empowerment. And the fact that we had that demonstration announced to the women of the world, some of the women who were feeling like us, that there was this movement. And that they weren't alone.
And it was humor and appropriation with a purpose. Like some of the most powerful artists and activists we've talked about on this show, the members of WICH connected on an intersectional level with other groups. In 1969, six women from the Black Panther Party were falsely accused of conspiracy and murder. They were held in a jail in New Haven, in solitary confinement, with lights that were always turned on 24 hours a day. Three of the women were pregnant, and two were forced to give birth under guard supervision without any care. WICH held one of their protests outside that jail. Here's a poem and chant written for the occasion, read in an episode of the Dig podcast.
Guards will be there when the babies are born. Guards will be there to take them away. The state will decide who's fit and who's not fit to guard and be guardian of mother and child. Therefore, WICH curses the state and declares it unfit. Oppressors, the curse of women is on you.
Some other feminists didn't like Witch. Many were caught up in the trap of respectability politics that so many can fall into. They wanted to look presentable, buttoned up, like a good girl, so that people might look at them and think, oh, okay, those women look normal. I guess they could have their human rights. The main women's movement considered Witch too fringe, too potentially alienating to the common folk, too much. But it was just that image of too much, of being big and bold and frightening, that earned Witch supporters. The first iteration of Witch disbanded in the early 70s. Members went on to other powerful groups, like member Heather Booth, who went on to create the Jane Collective, a Chicago-based underground service that provided 11,000 abortions in the years prior to Roe v. Wade. Witch, just like the stories of witches around the world, went dormant for a while. But in 2016, after Trump was elected the first time, Witch returned. In Chicago, Portland, Boston, groups took the tactics, the theater, the names, and protested Trump and ICE. In Brooklyn, the Witch group put a hex on Brett Kavanaugh during the Supreme Court hearing in 2018. Here's their hex, read in the Missing Witches podcast.
Now begins the time of reaping. The goddess is bearing, this time not a basket of flowers, but a sickle and scythe. Now begins the time of reaping. Every beginning has an ending. Every ending is a new beginning. Now begins the time of reaping. We come here, to this time, and to this place, to ensure that the just and unjust alike shall harvest what they've sown. Now begins the time of reaping.
Like so many of the artists we've discussed this season, we can't define the impact of Witch with numbers or laws. But we can look at this history, at the fact that women today are looking at a group from 60 years ago. Women today are hearing the same slurs, the same hypocrisy of leaders. We have a president who's a proud sexual predator. We have entire new forms of media that regurgitate the same old stereotypes. Sexism, racism, and misogyny in a digital era. But we also have the same ancient fears. Our society is still terrified by the image of a witch, of untethered women, of independent, fierce, free women. So we can look to the work of Witch, their use of art, and find a tool to fight back. So here's what we do from here. We lean in to unrespectability. We don't owe anyone good behavior, and we can use that mandate to act out in powerful ways. We use play and fun as a tool. As you've no doubt seen on social media, joy is an act of resistance. So is theater and art and making things for protest and for life. We appropriate insults. People think independent, childless, old women like me are useless. That just means I'm free. So I'm a witch. I'm a bitch. I'm a cunt. And I'm coming for you. And finally, we don't think of this as short term. Even if we get a new administration down the road, even if we miraculously come out of this terrifying, tyrannical moment, there is so much to fight against and for. This is a long-term commitment to making art for a better world.
Double bubble, war and rubble. When you mess with women, you'll be in trouble. We're convicted of murder if abortion is planned. Convicted of shame if we don't have a man. Convicted of conspiracy if we fight for our rights. And burned at the stake when we stand up to fight. double bubble, war and rubble. When you mess with women, you'll be in trouble. We curse your empire to make it fall. When you take on one of us, you take on us all.
The Art of Resistance is a podcast for the artists, the lovers of art, and people who want to resist but don't know how. These stories are designed to help us find inspiration from the past and empower us all to find some hope for today and tomorrow. I'm Amy Lee Lillard, and I wrote, narrated, and produced this show. And there's so much more to this story. At artofresistance.space, you'll find sources, images, and videos for this episode and all the others. Here's an easy way to learn more about Art as Resistance. Sign up for the free newsletter at artofresistance.space and get stories and tips every week. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next time.